The opinions expressed in Reality Rangers are individual and not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Spoiler alert for Season 3, Episode 2 of Traitors Canada and Season 49, Episode 6 of Survivor. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Reality Rangers. It's Malik Fortier.
And Andrew Hill.
And we're here to talk about the second episode of Traitors Canada. And we're just going to start right off where we left last episode. The impasse that Kevin and Coco, our traitors, had between choosing Ty to be their recruit and Venus. And Andrew, how did it all play out?
Yeah, this was really intense, really nerve-wracking to figure out who they were going to choose. I was really hoping for Venus, and luckily, that's what happened.
Yay!
We got to see our mother, Venus.
Mother Venus,
who is now our official third traitor, and I think that was absolutely the right decision.
But was there any doubt? Like, it just felt right to have Venus as a traitor, even if it was a recruit.
It felt like there was no way Venus could have been first boot. That just didn't feel right.
I don't want to live in that universe, and I'm glad we don't.
That is a scary, scary universe. And I think Venus has, like, the best possible, like, strategic and, like, social mindset in order to be a traitor. You can see her immediately. She was saying how she still felt like she was a faithful, so she was really easily able to get into that, like, character.
Exactly. She's going to be like the snake in the grass that takes out a lot of these faithfuls. They're not going to see her coming. But, you know, if you did watch her season, you should know that she's not one to mess with.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, Venus is our third official traitor for Traitors Canada Season 3, and we couldn't be happier. Sorry to see you go, Ty. I mean, like we said, you already won a show.
Yeah. How did you feel about Ty in his short moments?
In his short moments, I don't know. I think he was not giving me what I wanted. Like, I wanted more personality in Ty. When I watch Ty, it's like, okay, you're a comp beast. So, but, you know, the missions aren't a big aspect within the traitors. So I feel like this isn't the right environment for him. Maybe they'll bring him back like they're doing for Dorinda on Season 4 of the U.S. Traitors for being, like, a robbed goddess. I don't think Ty is a robbed goddess, though.
I wouldn't say Dorinda's particularly a robbed goddess either. Overall, I think it's a reasonable first boot. So we make our way into the morning. It was a very eventful breakfast. We saw a lot of, like, people playing up their strategies, figuring out what's going on. And, you know, we saw people like Curtis, I think, was the one to take the head of the table just so he could survey the entire room.
Yeah.
We saw a lot of, like, that kind of strategy.
We saw Jericho and Thompson both already falling under the Kevin Jacobs mist spell. They both wanted to sit next to him. They both said in their confessionals that they trusted the guy, which,
and
I don't know.
You know what? I wouldn't trust him, but hell yeah, I'd want to sit next to him.
Yes, of course. He seems like a riot.
Yeah. A riot is a little much. But we see at the end, of course, they always play up who's going to be the one eliminated. And the two remaining people that we see are Omar and Ty. Obviously, we know Ty went home, but this raises a big point in the episode where people assume, oh, Omar had a chance of going home last night. He might have been, like, a plausible murder.
Omar says something to the effect of, oh, I see Kevin's face, and I originally thought he was a traitor, but now I'm not so sure because he looks so, like, pale as a ghost or something. I don't think I've ever seen somebody like Omar, who's really good at the game, clock somebody as a traitor and then unclock them and, like, the turn of a heel.
I thought that was so funny. And I still think he'll think through every scenario, but it's still very entertaining to see him, like, take back his word that was immediately correct. And he's like, oh, maybe not. Like, you got to stick to your gut, buddy.
Come on, you got to be confident. Venus did great work at this breakfast. She played it off, acting like she was still a faithful. And I think she did a great job kind of not changing her behavior from before she was recruited. And that's the key to being a recruit. You got to stay consistent.
Yeah, Venus is very level-headed, as we talked last episode. I think we didn't get to see much of that on her original season, but I'm so glad we're getting to see her shine for real. I hope she goes all the way. We saw a lot more of the more obscure characters from last episode. We mentioned Thompson and Jericho, but I think we also saw a lot of Jade and Kitten, who are really, like, especially Jade is showing a lot more of their character this episode. It was very entertaining.
After breakfast, we kind of get a little insight into how Kevin's wanting to play the game. You know, despite Coco, after the recruitment ceremony, saying, okay, I want to try and appease Kevin, we see Kevin wanting to throw Coco under the bus already.
Yeah, Kevin was, like, kind of a mess this episode. We kind of predicted a little bit how Kevin, he was really, like, you know, playing it up a little too much. He needs to calm down. He needs to pivot. But it seems like he's trying to become the godfather, which is not the way he's so successful. Like, he was so successful on Big Brother because he was underestimated and able to make strategic maneuvers. But he's not, he's trying to play top dog when he already has a target, and he shouldn't be targeting Coco or Venus, who still want to work with him very much.
It makes no sense. He should be playing a Magic Mike Durzo game from season one of Traitors Canada, not a Boston Robin Redemption Island style game. I think he's really out of his depth here, and it's making for some weird choices. Like, we see him after breakfast go out in the backyard and talk with Venus, and he's, like, talking out loud about how he wants to backstab Coco and how they're all traitors. And Venus has to, like, physically take a step back and distance herself from the guy because he's acting so suspicious.
He's just doing too much. It was really bizarre, especially because there were people nearby that could have very well heard him. And his reaction to Venus saying to calm down was to start dancing to not look suspicious, as if that's, like, that's so much more suspicious.
Like, I guess he was doing that in the hallways last episode, but I don't know, Kevin. We need to talk about Kevin. We need to talk about Kevin because he's going from Big Brother legend to Traitors Canada flop.
Yeah, it's so, how do you get to this point, Kevin? I'm, like, baffled by Kevin. I wish he was the guy that I remember being so, like, entranced by. Where did that guy go?
It's like the Avril Lavigne theory. They replaced him.
He reminds me of, like, Frenchie from, like, American Big Brother.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I don't get it.
In the car, we see a few characters who we didn't see as much in the first episode. Rhea, specifically, which, Rhea, sorry, girl, I'm taking back what I said from the preseason episode. You are not giving us nothing. You are giving us everything, girl. She told Meredith that Curtis was throwing out her name, and that's already creating conflict and already creating discourse, and I love it.
Immediately, I felt, like, so much better on Rhea. We just didn't see much of her last episode, and then suddenly there's this whole conflict that, like, suddenly arises. Rhea is so much more of a fun character at this point.
We get to the challenge, and the pacing is weird.
It's still, like, even in the full episode, the pacing of the challenge was a little weird, and the two sections felt really disconnected.
Yeah, a little disjointed. So the first part of the challenge essentially is, like, a blindfold pinata-esque grab, cash grab, and where, you know, the players get partnered up and one person's blindfolded, one person's the caller. It's typical. And then based on how much money you collected from that, then the second part of the challenge is like a shield. Prisoner's Dilemma meets Mission Impossible meets, I don't even know what was going on there.
It was entertaining if you're just watching it muted.
Yeah.
Because, like, you'll see, you know, a bunch of fun stuff is happening and then you see the bridge explode and people are running off at full speed. But it's like, it's a small bridge on the shore, like the shore of the water. So it really doesn't feel like that justified to have these huge explosions. And even when you have the audio, it's like, what is the context? It was, like, really bizarre.
Okay, we're seeing Omar Zaheer and Kevin Jacobs do their best Tom Cruise impression. But you could kind of tell, I feel like the detonations were controlled because they're not going to blow up something in someone's face.
And it was always beside the dock. It wasn't on the dock.
Yeah.
But I also have to mention, just really quick, I found it really entertaining, Karin's, like, outfit. She looked she looked like an Ottoman.
She was giving almost ice cream sandwich.
It was, well, like, how do you wear an outfit that looks like a couch?
It
was,
it looked like pool floaty.
Yeah, it was really funny. I loved it. It was so entertaining.
That's the thing. Like, we say, oh, Alan's so fun or Claudia's so camp. Karin is the queen of camp when it comes to her outfits. Like, you'll have what, oh, she looks so dazzling. But then she'll have something else where she's wearing a big feather cap or this. And I respect these bold moves because that's what I want to see in the Traitors. It's all about, you know, the mystery and the intrigue and the campiness of it. It's a campy show. It's not like Survivor and Big Brother, you know?
Absolutely. I think with Alan, it feels like you're seeing good outfits as if they were at the Met Gala.
Right.
And with Karin, you're seeing the rich people from the menu would wear that.
Right. Or, like, it's giving maybe a Heidi Klum Halloween
outfit. Yeah,
yeah. Like,
if Heidi Klum went as, like, a reclining chair, she would be wearing Karin's outfit.
Lazy boy couture.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the challenge ended up with a bunch of people getting shields, which I don't know how I feel about that.
I did think, in concept, the challenge was fun. I just think it was, like, weirdly connected. It didn't make sense. But if it was, like, if it was something that was more connected as the first part to make it, like, make more sense for the doc segment, I think it's fun. It's, like, it's lighthearted. And I like the aspect of them having to decide who gets the shield without conversing with each other. So it allows them to, like, it creates conflict, which we see in this episode.
So one example of this was when we saw the aforementioned Rhea team up with Curtis. And Rhea, if we remember correctly, sacrificed herself last episode by getting off the boat. So you would expect Curtis to give the shield to her. Except for that doesn't happen because little birthday boy got bold and tried to take the shield for himself.
Yeah, he thought that because his birthday, it wasn't even that day, it was the next day, he thought, oh, she's going to give me the shield because she keeps talking about my birthday. Not true. And also, other thing I wanted to point out is how Rhea also talked with Curtis ahead of time. And it wasn't even, like, based on the boat. It was based on the fact that Curtis promised Rhea that he would give her, like, anything like that if the opportunity arose. But he thought that the birthday would override her.
The, like, birthday Eve?
Because she was talking about his birthday earlier in the day. Like, I talk about my friends' birthdays a few days before, but I wouldn't give them my life.
I'm giving them a piece of cake. I'm giving them a fun little trinket. I'm not giving them life in this game.
Yeah, this is a game for, well, right now it's a game for like $5,000, but you know.
You know, when we're talking about shields, there was an interesting moment after the challenge ended where Shala, I believe, just asked for clarification. Oh, right, who has shields? Hollywood Jade did not take kindly to that. Hollywood Jade remembered that and kept that in the back of their head. And we'll talk about that at the roundtable. But, you know, some may say, oh, that sounds like a traitor trying to get all the sheeps together and see who they can murder, who they can't. If I'm a faithful, I want to know who has a shield so that, you know, maybe if a shield gets hit at a murder, we can, you know, pinpoint what happened. It's good to have information. Information is vital in these kind of games.
I think with this kind of situation, it's like, when you think about it for 5 seconds, it's like, wow, that's a really good piece of evidence of that person could be a traitor because they're trying to figure out who they can kill. But then you think about it for 5 more seconds, and anyone in that situation would want to know for various reasons.
All right, and we go next to the roundtable, the first real roundtable of the season, my favorite part of every episode, where people get to sort things out at the table.
And spell each other's names horribly wrong.
Good thing Shaughnessy was not sus, because that would have been butchered.
You know what? A little bit of spoilers. I'm already very shocked that Shala's name was kind of spelt correctly.
Yeah.
They got the G in there, and that's shocking.
Yeah. So, you know, all throughout the episode, we're getting little breadcrumbs. This was one of the most obvious boots in all of the Traitors episodes I've watched. Curtis was shooting himself in the foot time and time again. Like we said, Rhea brought up the fact that he was selfish and costed her the shield. And he's just been, you know, throwing sus on people. And there was this kind of like 5-way attack, like, going on at the roundtable. It went Omer to Curtis because Curtis was throwing out Omer's name, but then Meredith was getting a punch in on Curtis, and then Lizette piped up on Meredith. And it was just like a train of events that was so hard to keep track with.
Yeah, I think that's where the aspect of live versus the streaming episode comes in, just because it was a lot more, it felt a lot more fluid on my end, I think. And yeah, there were a lot of, like, smaller moments in the streaming episode that I think probably didn't get edited into the live episode, like how You know, there was a decent amount of focus on Jade and Shala, on Meredith and Lizette, you know. But at the end of the day, regardless, it was still a very obvious boot, just not even based on the editing, but based on the events of how stupid Curtis had been the whole, like, time. We saw it was a almost unanimous vote. There were, I think, three other stray votes not from Curtis.
Yeah, like, I think Hollywood Jade made a point of not jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, they voted Shala just based on their whole thing. They had, I think, a vote or two on Meredith or Lizette.
Might have been one of them. Yeah.
But overall, it was a very majority rules Curtis vote, and he seemed a little heartbroken, but he did it to himself.
He went out on his birthday eve!
Oh, no!
Oh, no!
I also think it's really entertaining how the two people who really screwed them over from getting more money in the last episode, with Ty and Curtis both being incredibly stupid during the challenge, both got eliminated in this episode at the first chance that either of them got. So,
yeah, survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
After the vote, you know, you can't be too heartbroken on the first round table because the chances of you getting a traitor are slim. I don't think there's been that many cases of faithfuls getting it right on the first table. So yeah, the aftermath of the round table really focused on, I think, for me, it was the Lizette and Meredith fallout because it seemed like there was some bad blood there.
We saw Lizette kind of like crash out on Meredith.
Yeah, it seemed like either it was unwarranted or there was something that we weren't being shown.
It's one or the other. I'm not entirely sure. We see afterwards that Shala wants to comfort them, like see if they're okay, but they don't want to reveal their secret marriage. So Shala asks Jade to go check on Meredith just to, like, you know, wade the waters.
And I think this displays how good of a social player Jade is. Jade is very tactful and, you know, does a good job of, you know, not outcasting people and, you know, making sure everyone has, you know, some sort of relationship with them. And I think Jade is going to be one to watch out for. They're getting a really good edit.
I think they're just such a good social player where Shala, you know, it was a top choice if they couldn't do it. And I also think it was good for Shala because, you know, it felt like they were making a bond with Jade in that way. But also, they made the right call in the person they chose to kind of relay the information that they wish they could have gave.
Yeah, yeah. We saw the turret finally where all three traitors came together. And yet again, another twist. I like the twist in episode one, but we're reaching our twist capacity.
It was fun because it was the premiere. And I think it still would have worked, you know. But I think we're really pushing it a little bit. If this was a twist we saw a few episodes from now, I think it would be really entertaining. But we just had an unconventional murder, and now we're getting a second one where they have to nominate four people, and the challenge is going to be what decides who goes home.
Mind you, there's already, I don't know, five or six people, or six or seven people who already have shields. So there's such a small group of people to put up for murder. They do have the opportunity to put some of themselves up.
I want to know your thoughts. Do you think they should put up one of the traitors?
I don't know. I feel like they should put up four faithfuls or at max one traitor.
Yeah.
One traitor max.
My opinion, I don't think they should put up any traitors. At this point, these people, like, have seen the show. They understand that if they have to do something like this, then it probably means that the traitors are going to put someone up. Like, it feels like the standard at this point. And so you can take that to your advantage and kind of tell, like, convince people, like, oh, one of these four has to be a traitor, so we're going to vote them out until we get it, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of passe, the whole, oh, I can't be a traitor because I was a victim. No, we've done this before. We've seen...
We've done the song and dance.
It's people are catching on. But, you know, if we were to give our letter grades on the traitors this episode, I would give three different letter grades for each of them.
Yeah, let's do one for each just because I feel very differently about all of them.
For Venus, I would probably give her definitely a passing grade. I would give her like a A-minus, B+.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like I was going to say like A-minus to A. I feel like there wasn't much for her to do, but immediately it was clear that she's going to be very solid at staying under the radar. We haven't even seen any suspicion on Venus, and she is like, she's killing it.
She's killing it. She's locked in, and she is queening out.
We just haven't seen much from her.
No. Okay. Speaking of the other queen in the turret, Coco, what are your thoughts on Coco?
Coco, I think, is probably the best at the moment. There is the worry of, like, what if Kevin succeeds and is able to take out Coco?
And is Coco going to see it coming in time early enough to put a stop to it?
But I think overall, Coco got their way to take Venus with them. Overall, I would give them about the same grade, like A minus to A.
Yeah. I would probably do the same thing. But when it comes to Kevin Jacobs, I'm sorry. I'm putting you at the bottom of the pyramid. Yeah. Jacobs, you are DTM, doing too much. I would give Kevin probably like a B minus or a C plus.
Yeah. Like,
because I know he has potential.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, I think Kevin, he's doing too much. And it's really unfortunate because his whole thing that made him so good on Big Brother was that he... it looked like he wasn't doing enough, but he was doing exactly what he needed to do at every single moment. So it wasn't flashy, but it was really impressive. I'm entertained as hell, but I would give him a C+.
Yeah, I guess if you've already won a reality TV show and you get asked back, you know, if you're not like too protective over your legacy, round two can be for fun.
Round two can be fair.
I'm going to be messy. I'm going to make good TV, and I respect that. I like people who provide us good TV, but if he's playing to win, I don't know if he's got a chance to win this season. But we shall see.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't have high hopes, but we could see something crazy happen.
Speaking of crazy, what about last night's Survivor episode?
Survivor, I have been honestly really liking this season. I am very hopeful, and I think the fact that this season has switched up so much from the new era standard, where we always would have no swap, or at the very least, it'd be one swap of three tribes. This time around, we really haven't gotten many twists at all.
And so far, no one's lost their vote from a journey, which is always good.
It feels very lighthearted with their twists, and they focused on swaps this season. So we've had one swap into two tribes of seven, and then a swap this episode into three tribes of four.
Which as much as I don't love three tribes, I kind of like the shuffling.
Yeah, I think it's much better than the Mergatory. Glad we're done with that. But for now, I think that's where we're going to end it here. Thank you all for watching so much. It is a pleasure to do this podcast with you. And I think we'll see you next time.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. We've been your Reality Rangers. Have a good one, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.